When John Bradshaw's Healing the Shame That Binds You was first published in 1988, it struck a chord so profound that it sold over 1.5 million copies in the U.S. alone. This wasn't just another self-help book. It was a revelation that named an invisible demon millions were battling. Oprah Winfrey featured Bradshaw's work repeatedly on her show, calling it life-changing, while countless celebrities from Anthony Hopkins to Drew Barrymore have credited his shame framework with transforming their recovery journeys. What made this book revolutionary was its distinction between healthy shame, the natural human emotion that signals our limitations, and toxic shame, the soul-destroying belief that we are fundamentally flawed at our core. Shame exists in two forms, much like cholesterol has its healthy HDL and harmful LDL varieties. Healthy shame serves vital functions in human development. It grounds us in reality, reminds us of our limitations, and connects us to our fundamental need for community. It signals our essential human boundaries, prevents certainty and righteousness that would stop our learning, and ultimately becomes the foundation for awe, reverence, and spirituality. But when shame transforms from a temporary emotion into a permanent identity, it becomes toxic and destructive. Instead of experiencing momentary feelings of limitation or imperfection, a person comes to believe their entire self is fundamentally flawed and defective. This internalized shame is lethal. It makes us feel not perfectly imperfect, but totally imperfect, creating a profound internal rupture where the self becomes an object of its own contempt. The internalization process happens through three mechanisms: identification with unreliable shame-based models, typically parents, the trauma of abandonment that severs interpersonal bridges, and the interconnection of memory imprints forming collages of shame. Children with shame-based parents identify with them, carrying their parents' shame and internalizing it as their own. When children are abandoned, physically or emotionally, they lose the reflective mirrors needed to develop a healthy sense of self. Their emotions, needs, and drives become bound with shame, creating a deep sense of being flawed to the core. This internalization creates a profound self-alienation, where parts of oneself become alien, particularly emotions that weren't permitted expression in childhood. The authentic self retreats into hiding, replaced by a false self designed to protect against the unbearable exposure of one's perceived defectiveness. This false self might manifest as perfectionism or sloppiness, being the family hero or scapegoat, but regardless of form, it creates a life dominated by doing and achievement rather than simply being. Toxic shame becomes the driving force behind most psychological suffering, from depression and anxiety to addiction and relationship problems. It forms the core of both neurotic disorders, where one assumes too much responsibility, and character disorders, where one assumes too little. The shame-based person becomes trapped in a squirrel cage of self-perpetuating shame, where shame begets more shame in an endless cycle. The manifestations are varied but interconnected. Some develop grandiosity, either as narcissistic self-enlargement or worm-like helplessness, both representing a refusal of ordinary humanity through exaggeration. Others develop rigid perfectionism, striving to prove their worth through flawless performance. Many become consumed with controlling everything and everyone around them, as control temporarily alleviates the feeling of inner defectiveness. Perhaps most destructively, toxic shame fuels all addictive behaviors. The addiction cycle begins with the false belief that no one could want or love me as I am, generating distorted thinking that turns one into a human doing rather than a human being. The shame of being fundamentally flawed drives people to mood alter through substances, behaviors, or even emotions like rage or religious righteousness. After acting out, they feel shame over their behavior, intensifying their shame-based identity in an endless cycle. Toxic shame also manifests as characterological styles of shamelessness, where people transfer their shame to others. passing the hot potato through criticism, blame, contempt, judgmentalism, and various forms of emotional abuse. These behaviors focus on others to take the heat off oneself, creating a third layer of protection against feeling toxic shame. The perfectionist creates superhuman standards no one can meet. The power seeker compensates for feeling defective by controlling others. The rageaholic protects by keeping others away or transferring shame to them. Toxic shame's most devastating aspect is its multi-generational transmission, creating a complex web of emotional inheritance that can span decades and multiple family lines. Shame-based people instinctively find and marry each other, each unconsciously hoping the other will heal their wounded inner child. Their initial in-love fusion creates a temporary sense of wholeness as their incomplete selves merge in what appears to be perfect union. This ecstatic state, however, cannot sustain itself. Real differences inevitably emerge as their families of origin rear their shame-based heads, bringing with them generations of unresolved emotional patterns and expectations. The battle begins over whose needs get met and whose family rules will dominate, often manifesting in power struggles over seemingly mundane decisions like holiday celebrations, parenting styles, or financial management. These conflicts actually represent deeper struggles rooted in each partner's shame-based upbringing and unmet childhood needs. These dysfunctional family systems operate on rigid rules that perpetuate shame across generations. The primary rules include control or chaos, where family members must either dominate or submit, perfectionism or anomie, where standards are either impossibly high or completely absent, chronic blame, denial of the five freedoms, perceiving, thinking, feeling, wanting, imagining, and the no-talk rule that prevents honest communication about problems. Children in these families are assigned rigid roles to maintain balance, particularly in chemically dependent, sexually abusive, or violently dysfunctional homes. Common roles include the hero child, who achieves to make the family look good, the scapegoat, who carries the family's shame, the lost child, who becomes invisible, and the mascot, who uses humor to deflect pain. These roles are profound forms of abandonment, as children must sacrifice their authentic selves to keep the family system functioning. The unresolved shame gets carried forward and acted out across generations in increasingly complex patterns. Family secrets about suicides, incest, addictions, mental illness, financial failures, and other traumas remain hidden and unhealed, creating unconscious defenses like denial, idealization, repression, and dissociation. These psychological mechanisms prevent feeling the underlying pain, making healing impossible without conscious intervention. Children learn to carry these secrets without even knowing they're doing so, absorbing the shame through subtle cues, unexplained rules, and emotional atmospheres. Without therapeutic intervention or conscious awareness, the shame extends to subsequent generations, creating an ever-expanding web of dysfunction that can affect family relationships, career choices, addiction patterns, and intimate partnerships for generations to come. Beyond family systems, cultural and religious institutions often serve as powerful amplifiers of toxic shame through various mechanisms and societal expectations. Schools have historically been significant sources of toxic shame, operating on a perfectionist model that fundamentally denies the reality of healthy shame by assuming perfection is attainable. The standardized grading system compares students to an absolute standard, with failing grades becoming deeply internalized markers of personal inadequacy. Students who receive poor grades often incorporate these evaluations into their core identity, believing they are failures as people, rather than seeing grades as feedback on specific tasks. The educational system's strong bias toward rationalism, emphasizing reasoning, logic, and mathematical thinking, while neglecting emotional intelligence, intuition, and creative expression, further shames and alienates students with different learning styles or multiple intelligences. Religious systems have been particularly damaging through their historical emphasis on human wretchedness and original sin. Many denominations teach the concept of man as inherently flawed and corrupt, which has led to harsh child-rearing practices aimed at breaking a child's unruly will through strict discipline and punishment. Religious perfectionism creates elaborate behavioral scripts dictating precisely how to talk, dress, walk, and behave in almost every situation, making the appearance of righteousness more important than genuine moral development. The denial of secondary causality, teaching that human will is fundamentally inept and that man is worthless on his own, creates a deep sense of powerlessness and dependency on religious authority figures. Society itself functions as a dysfunctional family system built on rules of poisonous pedagogy that systematically deny and suppress emotional expression. This leads to widespread psychic numbing and various forms of addiction as people seek to cope with unprocessed feelings. The American success myth particularly damages self-worth by equating personal value with achievement, wealth, and popularity. This materialistic value system creates impossible standards where being successful requires constant striving for more money, status, and social approval. Additionally, rigid gender roles and the perfect 10 physical ideal cause untold suffering, especially for women who are judged primarily on appearance. Our culture handles emotions poorly, promoting a surface-level happiness while discouraging authentic expression of feelings like grief, anger, or fear. This creates a societal mask where people feel compelled to always appear happy and fine rather than honestly acknowledging their struggles and full range of human emotions. The combined effect of these institutional forces creates multiple layers of shame that become deeply embedded in individual and collective consciousness, making it extremely difficult for people to develop authentic self-acceptance and emotional wholeness. Healing begins with naming shame and bringing it into awareness. As long as toxic shame remains unconscious, it maintains its power. The first step is identifying how shame manifests in your life through perfectionism, people-pleasing, rage, criticism, addiction, or other defensive behaviors. This awareness starts to give you power over shame's destructive influence. The healing journey involves several key components. First, finding a non-shaming social network provides the essential context for healing. Since personal relationships created toxic shame, personal relationships must heal it. 12-step groups have been particularly effective, founded on the courage of people risking vulnerability with each other. The ideal healing group is non-judgmental, democratic, and allows for authentic self-expression and the full range of emotions. Second, leaving home emotionally means resolving family of origin issues through grief work. This uncovery phase involves reconnecting with the hurt and lonely inner child, a metaphor for blocked emotional energy. It requires re-experiencing blocked emotions as they first occurred and re-educating unmet dependency needs through new lessons and corrective experiences. Our compulsivities result from unresolved grief being acted out repeatedly. We must either work these feelings out by re-experiencing them or continue acting them out destructively. Third, integrating disowned parts of ourselves is essential for wholeness. Shame-based people often disown essential aspects of themselves, denying neediness, numbing emotions, and either repressing or overusing sexuality. These split-off parts became autonomous little selves that manifest as inner voices in our dreams, moods, and reactions. Techniques like voice dialogue work help us confront and integrate these disowned parts, recognizing that all our parts are acceptable, directly countering toxic shame. Fourth, confronting and changing toxic inner voices breaks the shame spiral. These voices represent what Robert Firestone calls an insidious self-destructive process derived from our parents' suppressed hostility toward us. By externalizing these thoughts, we can develop a more objective perspective and challenge both their content and dictates. Various techniques, from keeping an overreaction diary to practicing positive affirmations, help diminish these voices' power. The statement, "I love myself," represents toxic shame's greatest enemy and most powerful healing tool. Scott Peck defines love as the will to extend myself for the sake of nurturing my own and another spiritual growth, framing love as a deliberate choice rather than merely a feeling. This means self-love becomes possible through decision regardless of past experiences or current self-perception. The key distinction is loving who you are, not what you do, since toxic shame transforms you into a human doing by convincing you your being is flawed. Understanding this distinction is transformative, as no amount of achievement can heal the deep sense of defectiveness that marks internalized shame. Self-acceptance creates at-one-ment, being at one with yourself, which allows your full power to become available since you're no longer dissipating energy guarding your split-off parts. Loving yourself means giving yourself time and attention. The work of love requires extension. This includes allowing yourself proper rest, relaxation, solitude, and pleasure rather than driving yourself mercilessly. It means monitoring your feelings, needs, and wants through disciplined self-attention. Even when you don't feel self-loving, acting as if you love yourself, faking it till you make it, will gradually transform your feelings. Self-assertion is another powerful way to heal toxic shame, as it's grounded in self-love rather than the shame-based aggressiveness that seeks to win at any cost. Creating your own Bill of Rights, including rights to judge your own behavior, make mistakes, change your mind, and say, "I don't know," supports self-love by honoring your uniqueness and precious worth. Toxic shame creates a profound split between sexuality and spirituality, leading to either sexual addiction or rigid religiosity. This division manifests in various ways, from compulsive sexual behavior to complete sexual repression masked as religious devotion. Healthy sexuality is actually a manifestation of spirituality, while toxic shame drives them apart. The connection between these domains reveals itself in clinical practice. Many with sexual problems have spiritual issues, and those with obsessive spiritual problems often have sexual difficulties. This interconnection appears consistently across cultures and therapeutic settings. Healthy shame serves as a boundary that monitors feelings of pleasure and excitement, creating the first boundary of autoerotic excitement. It acts as an internal compass that helps regulate sexual energy and expression. When shame develops healthily alongside cognitive development, it manifests as modesty, a natural protection of privacy. This process typically unfolds during childhood and adolescence, where healthy boundaries around sexuality emerge naturally rather than through rigid external controls. Modesty, the developed form of healthy shame, safeguards a private place for sex and regulates sexual relationships by restraining us when love and intimacy aren't present. Shaler called healthy shame the conscience of love, recognizing its vital role in authentic sexual connection. Without the blush of modesty at the beginning of sexual love, there's only technique and role-playing, mechanical actions devoid of deeper meaning. Sexual shame protects against depersonalization, the cold fuck, where another becomes merely an object to use rather than a unique subject to love. This protection is especially crucial in our modern culture, where sexuality is often commodified and stripped of its sacred dimension. When we lose our sense of mystery, awe, and humility around sexuality, we lose a fundamental human capacity, healthy shame. Sexual fulfillment emerges when couples maintain healthy shame, a sense of awe and reverence for each other's perfectly imperfect humanity. This involves accepting physical imperfections, emotional vulnerabilities, and the natural awkwardness that can arise in intimate moments. When both partners have solid self-awareness, accepting their own strengths and weaknesses without projection, their relationship moves into spiritual territory. They create a safe space where both physical and emotional nakedness become possible. Sexual intercourse becomes a nurturing, caring experience between whole human beings in an I and thou embrace of equality and intimacy. This integration of sexuality and spirituality allows for deeper connection, where physical union becomes an expression of spiritual bonding and mutual growth. The healing of sexual shame often requires addressing both spiritual and psychological dimensions simultaneously. Partners must learn to navigate vulnerability, practice authentic communication, and cultivate reverence for the sacred aspects of their sexual connection. This process involves unlearning cultural messages that separate the physical from the spiritual and rediscovering sexuality as a pathway to both personal and spiritual growth. The true self represents the indestructible center of self, often called the soul in spiritual traditions. While many religions teach the soul's immortality, there is scientific support for the self's intuitive ability to use the environment for survival. The shame-based false self serves as a necessary adaptation for survival in threatening environments. Our natural ability to deceive is part of our true self's survival mechanism. Repression becomes a strategic tool that allows crucial dimensions of personal experience to be temporarily set aside, missing but not necessarily lost forever. This safeguards the child's true self and personal reality until conditions change and repression is no longer needed. Once we embrace our toxic shame and come out of hiding, we begin the uncovery process. As our ego strength rebuilds and we develop self-esteem, our true selves reveal themselves, potentially leading to discovery of our spiritual destiny. Each true self uniquely manifests something of our Creator that only we can express. Like one unique book in the world's library, each person reveals something of the Creator that couldn't be known any other way. Unconditional self-love allows our true self to flourish. Living defensively in secrecy limits life drastically, preventing authentic presence and the ability to experience the world's novelty. The true self is negotiated throughout life. A unique constellation of universal and individual characteristics experienced through vitality, aliveness, and relational fit. This involves identifying what brings us alive, the people who energize us, activities that generate vitality, our heart's desire, and where we feel most at home. At full maturity, shame transforms into dignity, honor, ethical sensibility, awe, reverence, modesty, and a sense of the holy. Mature shame becomes the source and guardian of spirituality, bringing 7 major blessings. 1. Sound choosing. We discover our true selves with their spiritual callings. When we find our bliss, we put yourself on a kind of track that has been there all the while waiting for you, moving beyond our ordinary will into the grand will. Our freedom and destiny merge when we follow our spiritual calling. 2. Secure attachment to a higher power. When we know our limitations, we recognize something greater than ourselves. Life's mysteries and immensity reveal our littleness and finitude, connecting us with healthy shame and a sense of the transcendent. 3. Solitude and solitude. Nourishing solitude flows from secure attachment to a higher power. When you love yourself, you seek solitude and protect it. With a strong ego and blissful union with God through meditation, you discover a place where you're never truly alone. 4. Solidarity with all things. Creating mindlessness leads to unity consciousness, where we experience our connection to all things. In this state, all dichotomies are synthesized and separation dissolves. You see your life as perfect and necessary, achieving total self-acceptance and overcoming toxic shame. 5. Sacrament of the present moment. Prayer and meditation enhance our ability to experience authentic presence, a profound state where every moment becomes potentially sacred. Living in toxic shame keeps us trapped in the past or anxious future, preventing us from seeing what's happening around us. 6. Synchronicity. Jung defines synchronicity as meaningful coincidences beyond mere chance. When we commit to our authentic path, unexpected opportunities and resources appear as if from nowhere. As Joseph Campbell said, If you follow your bliss, you begin to meet people who are in the field of your bliss, and they open doors. 7. Serenity with service and humor. Serenity means riding easy in harness. Life becomes less problematic and more spontaneous. Spiritual bliss creates a natural desire to serve others, and the courage to be imperfect creates a lifestyle of spontaneity and humor. A sense of humor may be the ultimate measure of recovery from internalized shame, requiring true humanness and the ability to straddle the more-than-human, less-than-human polarity. The journey from toxic shame to healthy shame is ultimately about embracing our perfectly imperfect humanity. It's about recognizing that our limitations and vulnerabilities are not flaws to be hidden, but essential aspects of being human. Healthy shame reminds us that we are neither gods nor worms. We are human beings with both magnificent capabilities and natural limitations. This delicate balance between our strengths and weaknesses forms the foundation of authentic self-acceptance. When we accept this fundamental truth, we can stop hiding behind false selves and defensive behaviors. These masks might include perfectionism, overachievement, chronic people-pleasing, or withdrawal from meaningful relationships. Instead, we can allow ourselves to be seen, to make mistakes, to need others, and to experience the full range of human emotions, from joy and excitement to fear and disappointment. We can love ourselves not despite our imperfections, but including them as part of our whole, authentic being. The process of integrating healthy shame involves practical steps: acknowledging our mistakes without self-condemnation, setting realistic expectations for ourselves, practicing self-compassion when we fall short, and reaching out for support when needed. It means recognizing that being human involves ongoing growth and learning rather than achieving some idealized state of perfection. This journey isn't easy. It requires courage, vulnerability, and often professional help to navigate the painful terrain of our shame-based histories. Many find that therapy, support groups, or spiritual practices provide essential guidance and validation. The work involves confronting deep-seated beliefs about our worthiness and gradually replacing them with more balanced, compassionate self-perceptions. But the alternative is a life of hiding, pretending, and suffering. As Bradshaw writes, the question becomes, I am loved and accepted unconditionally by my higher power. Who do I think I am to ever refuse this love? By healing toxic shame, we don't become perfect. We become real. This reality includes accepting our physical limitations, emotional needs, and inherent interdependence with others. In that reality, with all its messiness and limitation, we find the freedom to be fully alive, fully connected, and fully ourselves. This acceptance opens the door to genuine intimacy in relationships, greater creativity in work, and a deeper sense of peace with ourselves. It allows us to live from a place of authenticity rather than fear, embracing both our strengths and vulnerabilities as essential parts of our human experience.